Welcome to today's businessradio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, the host of the program that airs both on air as well as online and on demand. We have developed a business reference library of interviews with experienced business advisors to help you build enterprise value, improve profitability, control expenses, and formulate a plan for your eventual exit strategy. In other words, we help you maximize the value of your business. Today's guest is Michael Lasky, who is a registered patent and trademark attorney and an internationally recognized speaker on the topic of building stronger and more valuable companies, including exit strategies for privately held businesses. He is the founder of Altera Law Group, an intellectual property law firm in Minneapolis and Atlanta. He is also a graduate of the University of Minnesota and Syracuse Universities and a published author. This is the first of a three-part series of podcasts that will help you understand how to position your company's intellectual property to make your company far more valuable for your future sale and avoid a likely train wreck. Welcome to the program, Michael Lasky.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for inviting me.
So, Michael, with this title, do you see a train wreck coming, and what are we talking about?
Yes, I do. I may come as a bit of a surprise and provocative to a lot of business owners, but I have seen it before. I expect to see it again. What we have is, the reality is, the vast majority of privately held companies are not ready for sale when they think they want to sell. And the result is they will get far less for their company than they ought to. I mean, the statistics are pretty awful. First of all, most business in the United States is privately held. A good portion of that is family-owned, but the reality is only 30% of family-owned businesses survive to the second generation, so they're either going to be sold or they're going to be closed. And of those, only 25% even have a succession plan in place. Yet most privately held companies, the owners have at least 50% of their wealth tied up in their company. Often it's much more. Time magazine came out with the information, was very provocative, but they said only 5% of privately held businesses will actually be sold, and the remaining 95% will close. We don't hear much about the 95%, but for sure, even if it was 50, it's a terrible number. There definitely is a train wreck ahead, and the problem that we see is that companies aren't ready. Here's an amazing statistic that kind of encapsulates it all. When asking owners of companies who are 65 and older, 71% said they had no plans to sell their business. Well, when will they sell their business? And that's where a lot of them end up closing.
Now, Michael, in my practice, in my mergers and acquisition practice, I would say over the last 26 years, almost 50% of the business owners I've talked to weren't ready to sell. But what we meant by that is they hadn't done their estate planning, they hadn't done their wealth management. There were things they could do to improve their business, which is what we're going to talk about today. And they hadn't really done the things to maximize the value of the business when they were ready. So we've talked a lot of them out of selling because they needed to go back and they needed to talk about their legacy issues, they needed to talk about their wealth management issues, and they needed to take a cold, hard look at their business and make sure that it's the perception of the business is in the best possible place for the buyer, because that's going to help you get that best price. And one of the things that they rarely ever look at is the intangible property.
That's right, and that's why I say that I might hold the wild card to making their business much more valuable. Basically, everyone thinks that the only way to make your business valuable is to make it more profitable, and that is certainly a great idea, and I'm sure every business owner is doing that all the time. That's done. You're probably not going to be able to make it a huge incremental change in the profitability of your company. The second way to grow the value of the company is make the company much larger. A company is geometrically more valuable if it's larger, but how many companies want to become 10 times larger or even could? So that's really a variable we don't have much control over. The last one is the one that I want to focus on, which is the real intangible, the stuff that companies buy in addition to profitability, in addition to the real estate and other tangibles, are the intangibles that keep customers coming back and new ones coming to you. That is the X factor, and the X factor is highly variable, yet most companies are not focused on it at all. If you were willing to take a small amount of your time and focus on the X factor, you can get remarkable results, and it can work for any company. Every single company can do it. Very few do.
Now, Michael, when we sit down and start to prepare to sell a company, we do a couple of things. First, we go out and try to figure out who are the potential buyers for the business. But at the same time, we're putting together a booklet, an information book about the company that really defines the assets that are going to be transferred and include the financial data so that a buyer can see historically what they've done. But it's very important, and we work with the transaction attorneys, of course, to prove that book, because in that information book, it's a roadmap to the assets that are going to be transferred at the end of the deal. And if we talk about those assets at the beginning and make sure they're all in order, then when it comes time to transfer them at the end, and when it comes time to prove up the value to a buyer, we've got all that work done. And maybe you can tell us, how do we deal with those intangible assets?
Well, I am often on the other side of your transaction, or I can be on both sides. But when I'm on the buyer side, I always tell my buyer, would you like to pay less for this business? And I often am brought in it very late in the transaction. I will find something so terrible in the intangible assets in the company that they may not buy the company at all, or it's going to take a huge haircut. We've done some internal studies on privately held clients and how many of them actually own, for example, their company name. We find that about 65% of privately held companies own their company name. Where does the other ones don't? And a great many of them don't even know that. That's a huge problem.
So when they're going to sell their company, they think they're selling a going concern with a name and a phone number and a reputation. But if they haven't done their homework to make sure that they own those things, then they don't necessarily have a saleable asset in those
That's
intangible
right.
items.
You know, the buyer wants to grow the company, and they're going to be more visible to the competitors. And if there's a problem, it's going to come out in the buyer's hand. They don't want to buy a lawsuit. Take a look at the assets that you could buy in a company. You buy inventory if it's an inventory company, but you're never getting much more than, you know, break-even value, probably a discounted value. If there's real estate, that's very easy to value. You're never buying management. At most, you're buying management for transition, but the management's going to go. Are you buying employees? Not really. They're going to probably turn over as well. You're buying supplier contracts? Sometimes that's a big deal. Customer lists? Yes, that can be important too. What you're really buying in terms of customer lists is reputation. The reputation that someone is going to come back and buy from me, and new companies or new clients are going to come to me because of something I have done years before. And here's where the rub comes. Reputation in itself is not transferable. It's intangible, all right, but it is in no way transferable unless it's been converted into an asset that can be sold. And what I'm about is teaching you how to build the asset, convert it, and then you can sell it.
So from a buyer's standpoint, when a buyer takes a look at your company to buy it, he's going to look at all the tangible and intangible assets, including your reputation. And the more comfortable he can get with the thought that he can replicate your revenues going forward and own the assets, two things are going to happen. You're going to get a higher price, and more of that price is going to be fixed as opposed to variable or contingent fee. So reputation is a big item. Where do we start? How do we get started with defining right. Who owns that?
It's a three-step process, but I'll make it a three-and-a-half step. The first step actually would be decide that you really want to make your company more valuable and more saleable. I know that seems crazy. Everyone should want that. But the statistics and the reality shows that most companies are doing absolutely nothing toward that. So if you make the first decision, I am going to exit this business one day and I want to take my money out of it and as much as I can, then I've got to do three things. Number one, with respect to the intangibles, I have to get my story right. What I'm talking about is a concept called strategic positioning, which is the why in why customers come to me and why new ones come to me and why the same ones come back over and over. There is a reason. It's usually not price. It's sometimes quality, but it's something else much more intangible that you will build into your brand. Step one is get your story right. Step two is you're going to invest your story in brands or a brand or brands, which then can become the depository of your reputation. And the last step after you build the brands is you're going to convert these brands into ownable properties through the Federal Trademark Registration System, which gives you documentation of something you own, and then the buyer can buy it. Short of doing those three steps, you're floating in thin air on the most variable factor in a sale, the X factor of intangibles.
So when do you start doing all this, Michael?
Well, of course, the time to start is when you started your company. And it turns out that that is the least likely thing on your mind. I've got to get a name for the company. I've got to get a name for the product or service. I'll pick something generic, and I'll go with it, and I'll fix it later. It never happens. So obviously start when you start the company. When's the next best time to start? Now. You need a good 3 years, maybe 5 years. If you're going to get a huge multiple of your company or a greater multiple than you're otherwise going to get, you need some time. This is not an overnight experience.
So the first step is getting your story right or strategic positioning. Can you tell me about that? How do we do it?
Okay. Let's break it down into something very simple. You and I are on an elevator, and I turn to you and I say, Tom, what does your company do? And what you're going to do is the famous elevator speech. And they call it that because you have 3.5 seconds before the door opens on the next floor and maybe 15 seconds and someone's going to walk out. And that's all you got. That, if you can explain what differentiates your company from the competitor, what brings people back to you, that's what positioning is about. And it's not just enough to have this positioning. You have to believe in it, and it has to be the core of everything you do. So maybe I should give you some examples.
Please do.
Okay. I bought my first Volvo in 1971, and there were like four of them in the Twin Cities. And whenever someone would come by with or drive by with a Volvo, we'd pull over and talk about where we were going to get parts. It was that sort of rare bird. But in the 80s, Volvo came up with an entirely new idea to sell its car. Instead of being just kind of quirky and Swedish, it was all about, well, you know what it is. Safety. When you think Volvo, you think safety. That's the positioning of Volvo. They never say that it's a good-looking car. They don't say it drives fast. They say it's safe. And if they ever deviate from that, they're going to lose. McDonald's. The positioning of McDonald's is not, we have a great restaurant with great food. They have never said that. They say it's the same everywhere. So when you see a McDonald's, you know what you're going to get. That's why it is the largest chain in the world, because people have expectations and they're always met. But it's not about great food, which is kind of an odd positioning, but it works.
It's back to safety once again, because you know what you're going to get because of the consistency.
Fair enough. with Apple Computer, Apple's positioning is computing can be simple. And then recently they've added, it can be fun, it can be cool, and I got to own it. But basically, it's we're going to take the monster that Microsoft made and we're going to tame it. And for an awful lot of people, that is all they need. Making it cool was sort of an extra benefit. If they ever make something too complicated, it won't sell. It will deviate from their core principles, their strategic positioning, their elevator speech. Steve Jobs on the elevator in 3.5 seconds would say, I make complicated things simple.
And their creative folks have really bought into it, but as old bean counters, we still stick with the IBM. So.
Well, IBM's positioning for a long, long time was brilliant. They deviated from that, and that's brought them trouble, but it was basically this. We don't make the best computers in the world. That's not what we're here for. If you buy from IBM, you'll never get fired for making our choice. That was them from 1950, 60, 70, 80, and then things started to get kind of dicey. So they lost their way. Walmart's positioning is, we're gonna get things cheaper, and we're gonna pass the price on to you, price reduction on to you. And even Saturn, the company that just went out of business, had great positioning. Basically, it was, we're not gonna haggle over price. We're gonna talk about the car. So almost everything that we're familiar with has very clear positioning. Otherwise, it probably isn't gonna be around. Every company can have that positioning. That's your elevator speech.
So while you're building your business, you want to tie the name of the business to some simple thought that everybody gets about who you are or what to think about your business.
That's right. And it seems simple. It is difficult. And the greatest problem is that it's universally skipped by small businesses because they don't understand the power of connecting with their clientele repeatedly in the way that the big companies have learned.
And they've been busy out there fighting for those customers one at a time. And maybe for 25 years they've been running the business, and it's evolved, and this thing changes a little bit. But is it after 25 years and you haven't really done this, is it too late?
No. Well, it's important to remember that if you spent 10 minutes a day refocusing all the people in your business and all your collateral and everything on the positioning that you had selected, maybe the one you selected at the outset. Imagine the cumulative value. It's kind of like pushing on a boxcar. A boxcar weighs, 1,000 tons. You push on it, it doesn't move. But by the laws of physics, if you push long enough, it will move. And once it's moving, it won't stop. Same thing with positioning.
So, Michael, where's the train wreck when it comes to step one, getting your story right?
All right. Well, the first thing is, I guess, not believing there ever will be a train wreck. That 65-year-old business owner says, I'm going to continue to run this business forever. It is not going to happen that way. You have to realize that you are going to want to exit and extract the money out of your company. The sooner you start thinking that way, the better. Second is not believing that you can actually pull this off. You can actually increase the value of your company using this X factor. It can be done. I'll talk more in a later podcast about how. And the third mistake is skipping the positioning step, though the Y step, the elevator speech step, and just going to stick a brand on something. It's not going to work.
So remember to get your story right. Remember there's three steps to this process. And when we get to the next podcast, we're going to talk about the second step, which was?
Selecting your brands.
So thanks for tuning into this podcast on todaysbusinessradio.com. And we hope you go to podcast number 2 of 3, which we'll talk about selecting brands which support your story. You have been listening to a podcast with Michael Lasky on todaysbusinessradio.com. Please tune us in on News Radio 830 WCCO every Saturday morning to hear more about how to maximize the value of your business, or go to todaysbusinessradio.com and click on Topics or Contributors to listen to other valuable topics of interest to business owners. All content provided by Today's Business Radio is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal, accounting, and business advisors. Today's Business Radio is not liable for the contents of this podcast, nor does it endorse any commercial product or service mentioned or advised in this podcast. All radio shows, podcasts, and other content provided by Today's Business Radio is copyrighted and may not be reproduced or downloaded for any reason without prior written consent of Today's Business Radio. Thanks for listening to todaysbusinessradio.com.